it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to our second Wisden World Cup Daily Podcast. Pakistan beat Netherlands by 81 runs at Hyderabad, a final scoreline that doesn't really reflect how close the Dutch came to pulling off the mother of all World Cup upsets. Netherlands had Pakistan 38-3, and at one point, with Baz de Leeuw looking $1 million at the crease, they threatened to chase down 287. I'm Yaz Rana, and with me today is Ben Gardner. Ben, we didn't get that upset that we cheekily predicted on the podcast yesterday, but until Harris Ralph took two wickets in an over, it should have been three if it were not for a clanger from Iftikhar at slip. Netherlands were properly in this game.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, and then, you know, let's start with the Netherlands, having had such an amazing journey to this World Cup, sort of the 13th team in the Super League that then got quashed. They're kind of showing the merits of that competition, I guess, by coming through that qualifier in such amazing circumstances with that brilliant game against Scotland. And the hero in that game was de Leeuw, and he was the hero in this game too. Was robbed for the Player of the Match award, but took four wickets to almost like a Ralph-esque two wickets in the middle when he took two in an over to kind of, you know, halt the charge that Pakistan were putting together. They were genuinely in the game. It is weird how quickly, I mean, it just shows how important de Leeuw is to that side. And I guess there was a middle order side. I mean, you know, Pakistan were 38-3, Netherlands were 120-2. That kind of shows you that even if the final score was, you know, shows that it was a reasonably convincing win. And it was convincing, you know, Pakistan, they had a lot in the tank. I mean, you can say, you know, what if they get through that Ralph spell? But Ralph was a brilliant ODI bowler, and that is exactly what makes him so good.
And he's pretty much the best at that in the world. I think you're completely right on Netherlands, you know, dismissively written off going into the tournament. And it'd obviously be a miracle for them to qualify for the knockouts. But they will continue to be a team that causes problems. Looking back at Afghanistan's 2019 World Cup, they were winless, but they very nearly beat India. They very nearly beat Pakistan. To get through that qualifier, to get to a 10-team World Cup, you have to beat decent teams and emerge from a lot of competitive cricket. I mean, this year, Netherlands chased down 374 against West Indies and obviously qualified for this tournament ahead of West Indies. And in an ODI last year against Pakistan, scored 298. And against a strong Pakistan attack as well. So there's proper talent in that side. On de Leeuw, I really liked how he bowled. He's quite speculative in that he targets the stumps quite a lot and he's always trying to move the ball. So I think he'll go for runs quite often, but he'll also pick up wickets on the way. And he played some amazing shots. The hook for six off Harris Ralph, a couple of delicious straight drives as well. Phil asks, is the Baz de Leeuw wink the single coolest moment in World Cup history, giving Ralph a wink after hooking for six? And Ben, there's a bit of history between de Leeuw and Ralph as well.
Yeah, but good history, nice history. I mean, because actually Ralph had a few words for the number 11 after bowling him. They had a nice little battle as Netherlands sort of thwacked away at the end. But yeah, on Ralph and de Leeuw, so it was the 2022 T20 World Cup, so last year, Ralph hits de Leeuw with a bouncer, you know, proper black eye, sort of slightly cut cheek almost just from the impact of it. And then after the game is they're sharing a nice word, Ralph saying like, come back stronger, keep hitting sixes, that sort of thing. And then this happens in this game. I think it was a very nice moment. But yeah, that was especially because Ralph had looked like he was rushing Dalida just before that hook for six, and this wasn't really a top edge, it was absolutely out the screws, that just flew perfectly square, and then the perfect wink and then a little smile as well, so there wasn't any bad blood at all.
Nice. And you've got two mind-blowing Baz Dalida stats for everyone.
Yes, is it two or if anything it's three, I think.
Three, okay.
So let me see if I can phrase these right. So of the every fourfer for Netherlands in the World Cup that's come against a side other than Namibia has been taken by one of the Dalida family.
Fantastic.
Him and Father Tim Dalida. 50% of the players to score 60 or more and take four wickets in a World Cup game are from the Netherlands. The other one, Kloppenburg, during the...
I was just about to say it.
the 2003 World Cup. And this is my favourite one. He is the first player in ODI history to score 50 and take four wickets in consecutive ODIs. And the previous one was actually the last game of that qualifier when they pulled off that extraordinary win against Scotland, which they needed to chase just under 300, I think, in 43 overs. And it looked like they were out of it. And then he played an absolutely stunning assault to get in there. So yeah, he's a properly gun cricketer. And yeah, that was why it just felt like the game kind of felt like it was over as a contest when he got out. But until teams get him out, they will be a bit fearful of the Netherlands going through the tournament, I think.
Going back 6 or so hours, Netherlands had Pakistan 38-3 and Rizwan and Shaquille got Pakistan out of a hole. But it was Shaquille in particular who really got the innings going. And in a way, he's similar to the Ravindra story in here's a guy who we've seen do well in Test cricket, but as an obdurate left-hander who's very cautious, thrown into the warm-ups. He's never played a PSL game. He's played a few ODIs, but not done much in them. Does really well in one warm-up game. And he looks like he's got all the shots. I was wondering, where the hell's this guy been in white ball cricket before? Because I think he actually makes the Pakistan top order look much more solid.
Yeah, and then they've had a few options there and they've been kind of testing a few out. And he's just come in basically at the right time. They had Salman Ali Aga, who didn't do that badly either. But this looks like, I mean, Saud Shaquille he's the pedigree player, I think, and he fits as a number five who can play spin really well. And yeah, he was brilliant. I mean, there was that one great moment where he had spotted that the Netherlands had one too many fielders outside of the 30-yard circle, so plays the big shot which he gets for four and then tells the umpire, I'm gonna have a free hit now, thanks, and then hits that for six. And that felt like the moment when the tension kind of eased out after that start. They put together a bit of partnership in Rizwan. But yeah, that was a really impressive knock. And actually, in some ways, you know, Pakistan fans will, you know, feel that maybe they should be beating the Netherlands by more, and that, you know, they'll be worried about being 38-3 early on. But actually, in some ways, what would Pakistan have really taken from this game if, you know, Babar Azam had scored 150 and then Shaheen takes, say, four and over and with the new ball, and then the game is done. Actually, they've learned quite a lot, and there is a fair amount to take from it. Like Rizwan, I guess we knew he was a very good number four, but it's good to have that absolutely confirmed, and then to have the guy inked at number five, and then also to have that lower order of Nawaz and Shadab playing two pretty key hands. That is really important. And Pakistan's is an odd side, and they bat down to four and I guess now five, and then you've just got quite a lot of all-rounders, but that will bail you out on occasion, and that's what it did. Because it wasn't just they were 38-3, they were 188-6 as well. Like that could easily become
220 all out,
exactly, whereas actually it's 286 and you're like, that should be enough. And then obviously Ralph was brilliant, but I guess they'd be pretty encouraged by Shadab with the ball as well.
He got a lot better once he took his wicket.
Exactly, yeah. And he has struggled with the ball recently. I mean, Butch was saying on the pod last week that maybe Usama Mir should play over him. And, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, singing his praise in the rooftops. It should be the guy who's the absolute linchpin of the side. And we're kind of taking quite a lot from him, you know, scoring 30 with the bat and taking a wicket. This should be kind of like a, you know, an average Shadab Khan performance. But hopefully he will take some confidence from it. And he does have these periods of form where he goes up and down, and hopefully he's just on the way back up again.
A couple of negatives, I guess, on Pakistan. Top order run still a problem. Fakhar Zaman is in miserable form. He's been a banker for them for so long in ODI cricket, but he hasn't got to 30 in, I think, at least 10 games. And Whisper, I think Shaheen is just clearly not at his best. And I wonder, has he been at all since he returned from that knee injury that he got during the T20 World Cup last year? He returned early in the year. He was more expensive than usual in the PSL, went at more than 9 and over. Probably only one standout performance in international cricket since then, that 4-for against India in the Asia Cup. I thought he was noticeably a bit short on pace, and it's not loads, but it's enough to make a difference. At one point, a graphic came up on the screen and it said his average speed was 83.5 miles per hour, which is just a bit down for Shaheen. And we're looking at his spells over the last year, even when he's picked up decent figures, he's not been as penetrative with a new ball as you associate with Shaheen. And he's obviously so important to how Pakistan play, and without Naseem Shah as well, that becomes doubly more important. Obviously lots of time for him to get back to his best, but I do wonder that actually just low key, has he not really been there since the T20 World Cup last year? And I think the bowling in general looks a bit light. Hassan Ali is a significant downgrade on Naseem Shah. I know pretty much everyone in the world is, and I know that Hassan Ali took a couple of wickets today, but I think you could massively see the difference between the two of them. The one real positive in the bowling attack is Ralph. Ralph was, I thought, brilliant. Pretty much won them the game. Anyway, time for a break. In part two, we'll answer more of your questions, hear Ben's moment of the match, and get his view on the England defeat, as well as looking forward to tomorrow's two games.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Amin Malik asks, will posting scores of 280 be enough against stronger oppositions? I think that's a very interesting question, because I think we're still trying to work out what a good score is at this World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, it wasn't enough yesterday and it was enough today. But I think it will also depend loads. Just, I mean, it depends on which team you are, if 280 will be enough. If you're Pakistan and if Shaheen is back to being at his best, then 280 might well be enough if he takes two with a new ball and then Ralph takes two through the middle overs, then teams are going to struggle to make that bigger score against you. But if you can't really rely on your bowlers to take wickets, then yeah, you're going to need a few more runs. And equally, I guess, yeah, we'll get a few more ideas about what the conditions around India are like. They play Dharamsala and Delhi tomorrow. Delhi might be quite spin friendly and might be a bit lower scoring, so that'll be an interesting game. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's pretty neither here nor there answer to say that 280 is probably neither here nor there. Mm. That might sometimes be enough and depends on the bowlers and the conditions on the day. But yeah, it's going to be, I mean, but I guess going into the last World Cup, there was one more game where there were loads of runs scored. And we were saying, like, is this the World Cup where 500 gets scored? And actually,
it really wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
But just saying on the podcast last week, he doesn't really expect this to be a particularly high scoring World Cup. I do wonder, though, if Vikram Singh got a 50 and he looked really good, particularly in the power play. I think in the two games so far, obviously it's two specific venues, it has looked slightly easier to bat under lights when there's a bit of dew compared to in the daytime in the searing heat. It's only two games, so I don't want to draw too many firm conclusions from that. Ben, what's your moment of the game?
This
was just brilliant.
It was, and in a way, well, it didn't sum up the game except that it was just properly chaotic. It was the run out of Mohamed Nawaz, and I'm trying to remember it in my head to get everything in there. So,
he gets struck on the pad.
But it wasn't him that got struck on the pad, right? It was Shaheen that got struck on the struck on the arm playing a reverse sweep. And you think, how does a missed reverse sweep turn into a run out for the non-striker at the striker's end? Like that shouldn't really happen, but it kind of balloons up in the air, at which point, you know, Nawaz tries to come down and then gets sent back because the single's not on. But the throw comes in, Nawaz would have been home at the non-striker's end, misfielded, there's no one can gather at the stumps, at which point Shaheen charges down, but because Nawaz had to take the time to go back, then turn around, he's kind of struggling to make it. The one good bit of cricket in that is that a direct hit comes in and he's sent on his way. It was properly chaotic, and it was weird how, especially that first innings, how chaotic it felt kind of all the way through, that Pakistan was scrambling up. Then you look at the score and it's like, oh, actually, they've got 286 and they're probably like pretty strong favourites here.
Mm, definitely. And quickly, you obviously weren't on yesterday's pod. What were your thoughts on that England game? You said to me earlier that you thought England are a little bit muddled at the moment. They don't really know what they're trying to do with selection.
Yeah, well, because there was quite a lot of focus on their batting approach and whether that was muddled. And actually what you said about the new ball, I guess, comes into that, in that it actually felt like maybe they could have got to a fast start. I know those are New Zealand's threat bowlers, aren't they? Henry and Bolt. But Bairstow hits that six in the first innings and you think England are away here, and it didn't. They didn't quite kick on, and it felt more deliberate than it would have done in the past. Like sometimes, you know, you're 50-1 at the end of the power play and that's because they've bowled really, really well. In this case, it felt like they were happy enough to be that, which is different from England in the past. But I think actually...
And we got a couple of people yesterday email in saying that we were potentially harsh on Milan. I think that isn't directed at Milan. That is just the entirety of the top three.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when you go through that New Zealand series before the World Cup, Milan was regularly scoring at about or on a ball or a bit above through the power play. Like, I don't think he's the issue. And if anything, actually, I think England... The thing with the muddled thing is that I feel like they need to back their batters to be batters and back their bowlers to be bowlers. Like, it's a kind of neither here nor there lineup at the moment, really, which means that it feels a bit short on batting and a bit short on bowling. You're like, hang on, how have we got Moeen at five or six, and also we're relying on Curran to take the new ball and to be our third seamer? Whereas, like, I feel like when Stokes comes back in, I think what England probably will do, but I think they should do it, but what they will do is that Stokes will just come back in for Brook, I think. But I think if they just back the top six, you have Brook at five, Butler at six, that feels really strong. And then you also maybe probably bring in Topley for Curran. Then you've actually, you've got four bowlers there that you could absolutely bank on. You can sort of fiddle the rest of the 10 overs from, you know, from Root, maybe one or two from Stokes, who knows? I guess maybe that'd be more to the back end of the tournament. And then you've got either Livingston or Moeen. And then you've got, but you won't need the batting of those guys so much because you've got a top six that you can really count on. That feels to me like it makes a lot more sense. And actually, if you look at the lineup that ended the 2019 World Cup, as much as England had batted deep for a long time in the build-up, by that point, you know, Archer had come in, who, you know, we thought could bat, turns out hasn't yet shown that in international cricket, I suppose. Moeen was dropped. So you had Wokes at seven and
Plunkett
and
eight.
Plunkett eight. Yeah, so And England, you know, okay, they stumbled over the line in the final, but before that, they were still putting up big totals and brushing teams aside. And you need to be able to bowl really well to win World Cups. And the way you get to those imposing totals by your top six, making runs and averaging 40. And that's this top six that can do that, I think. So.
And tomorrow we've got two potentially really interesting games, Bangladesh versus Afghanistan and South Africa versus Sri Lanka. Bangladesh and Afghanistan are two pretty evenly match teams. I wonder how much Afghanistan have moved forward since the 2019 World Cup. And then South Africa, Sri Lanka is a game at Delhi, which, as you mentioned, is a slow, low surface that could play into Sri Lanka's hand.
I guess so. The one big blow for Sri Lanka is that, you know, obviously Hasaranga ruled out for the tournament and Teek Sharma's going to miss this first game.
With Hasaranga already out.
Exactly, yeah, with an injury. It's not a serious injury, but just missing this one game is... it's huge, and it's going to put so much on Dinesh Welalaga, who, you know, was you know, no one had heard of him until a few weeks ago, and he has that amazing all-round showing against India, and now he's almost the bowler that their World Cups are resting on. And actually, it seems silly to say because it's the first game for both of them, but it kind of feels, if any of these four teams are going to make a real push for the semi-finals, they can't afford to slip up against the other teams in that bracket. Yeah. Because if you do, you might have to take two games at least off New Zealand, England, India, Australia. That looks like it's going to be pretty hard. I mean, presuming England get a bit better. So I think two fascinating games. I guess I'd probably predict Bangladesh and South Africa to win the two. But yeah, I'm going to be getting up early to watch that first one. And I'm fascinated to see how they both play out, I guess.
I think it's really, really interesting. Because I think towards the end of the World Cup, the table, I think, will look pretty similar to how most people predict. But there will be a point where a team that's not fancied to qualify for the mm-hmm. final four threatens to do that. And as we said yesterday, as we said in the preview pod, to qualify for the semi-finals, you probably need six wins as a minimum. And as you say, if you don't get a win tomorrow, if you're one of those four teams, that target of six looks pretty far away. Mm. Well, absolutely loads to look out for tomorrow. I'm off on a stag do. So in my place in the hosting chair will be Katia, with input from Ben, Jim Wallace, and podcast newbie, Torwid Qureshi.
Does the stag do explain the hat?
It does not explain the hat.
Sports Social Podcast Network.